Hey, what's happening? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. This episode is brought to you by my fantastic sponsor, El Cajon Harley. If you need a motorcycle, don't go anywhere else. Go to El Cajon Harley. I don't care what state you live in or country. Hit them in Southern California. Fantastic dealer. How cool is that? Sponsoring the podcast. Nobody cooler than that. Outside the box going, yeah, we want to be a cool dealer. Check them out, El Cajon Harley Davidson. They got the brand new Milwaukee 8 touring models in there. I rode it. This thing burns rubber, man. Excellent new motor by Harley, hitting a home run with that thing. They also got a killer service department. They can get you financed, man. You're thinking maybe you got bad credit or something. Go see them, man. I got financed, and look at me. I'm gangster. Anyway, El Cajon Harley, they got motor clothes, helmets, all kinds of stuff. Go see my boy Greg Riley. Follow them on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and go see him, El Cajon Harley. All right, let's get into the show. Great guest today. Introduce yourself.
Hey, buddy. It's Matt Bronger. Hi, everybody.
How are you, bud?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, yeah. I've been trying to have you on for a while, but we're both fucking in and out of town.
Gone all the time. That's the problem with doing Friends podcasts. It's just like, you know, we all live here, but we don't live here that much.
I know. Where you been recently?
Oh, let's see. I was in Brooklyn. I hit a couple places in New Jersey. I'm just about to go to Denver and Dallas.
So, yeah, where are you going? Comedy Works?
No, I'm doing like this beer festival with Beth Stelling. We're doing like a one nighter that a friend of mine's a promoter out there and got me a great deal and then just going to play Hyenas in Dallas.
Yeah,
I've never played there before.
I haven't either.
Okay.
How long have you been doing comedy?
About 16 years.
Wow. And where are you from?
Portland, Oregon originally.
A great city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Started doing comedy in Chicago though.
Oh, what? So, what got you to Chicago?
I just went there right after college because I had I was back when I was a pretentious actor type, and my friends were out there acting in like black box theaters, and we're just come on, and that was kind of like your working man actor city, and I was like, I want to do that. Yeah. And, you know, I went to school in New York, and everybody...
I want to be super poor.
Super poor.
Beyond poor.
Yeah, yeah. and I fell into the improv scene from that, and then went into stand-up from there, you know, and started out with, you know, Kyle Kinane, Pete Holmes, Camille Nanciani, and Hannibal and the gang. So, like...
Wow. You know, what a fucking crew that
dude,
is.
Dude, we were like that. I mean, I look back, it's like, now it's like X-Men Origins. not necessarily for me, but for a lot of us, where it's just like... So,
yeah, you too, though.
We didn't even know. You know what I mean? We had no idea that we were going to, I don't know, so many of us would make it so big.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the guys you just described, the thing I love about each one of them is they're completely original, including yourself.
Thanks.
There's not like, you know, it's not like, oh, that's the grunge era, you know, where they all wore the same outfits and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, completely.
It truly is. So all those guys are in that long, 17 years?
Not necessarily as long. I mean, they were like, you know, like Hannibal was younger than us.
Right.
TJ Miller was younger than us.
Yeah, look at those
but
guys.
Like, yeah, I mean, it was still from, you know, the same, you know, I could go on like John Roy, Nate Craig. And,
yeah,
you know,
John Roy, good friend.
A lot of people, you know, I just... It was kind of this, weird ass little scene.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've had some things come up over the weekend, and it's good to talk to somebody because I don't have too many comedians on. I only like to have comedians on that, you know, like I bond with. You know what I mean? I'm not just gonna have a guy on like, hey, so what are you about? Everybody's already doing that.
That's how I feel, dude. Because like, you know, I've just started having. I have a podcast called Ding Donger with Matt Bronger, where I basically like hitchhike into your life for like half an hour. Then I get out. It's like a crazy guy just jumping into your car hitchhiking. Because that's when I listen to podcasts, like in the car or on a plane. Like, you know, so I just like, let me jump into your life. And so now I'm having friends on, but I'm just having friends on.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't. None of us want to be an interviewer.
It's
really
not a promo machine or anything. It's just people that I look up to and also am very interested in. And those guys, including yourself, that y'all mentioned, those are styles of comedy that are way outside the box. They're not really. I don't really. As I get into it, I'm coming up on 7 years here next month, and.
Doing great for 7 years, man. That's awesome.
The thing is, I hit a couple things this weekend, and it's great that you're a guest today because I can talk to you about it while we're on the show. One of them was, do you remember nightmare weekend you had as far as like crowds?
Yes.
Yeah. Where was it?
The very first road gig I ever got.
Oh yeah.
Ever got. Mick Betancourt, who was kind of like our kind of like godfather back then, like around our same age, but he'd been doing comedy longer.
Yep.
And he was also just at the time a stone maniac. Like Now he's now he's like sober and he like writes hour-long dramas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He worked on SVU for the longest and all this shit. It's, his career is amazing to me, but he, you know, I was waiting tables and he was like, he was the first guy who said to me, hey, you can make a living at this someday. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And then B, at some point, he just went, hey, I got this gig this weekend. Both the headliner and the feature dropped out. Do you want a feature for me? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
And it didn't even enter my mind that it was the weekend after September 11th, 2001.
Oh.
Didn't enter my mind.
Wow.
Like, I'd pretty much just started. I'd been doing it maybe a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And, like, it didn't, I was so clueless. It's that thing where, I mean, I'm one of those people who I don't see the forest for the trees so many times.
Absolutely.
Where I'm just, you know, you consider everything but the most important thing.
Yeah.
I should have just been
Are people looking for comedy right now?
Yeah. I'm just been like, no. And we played this place in this area called the Tri-County area in Illinois, that it was a comedy club and then it turned into a dance club afterwards. Like the fog machines would be getting hooked up like while you're
and
still up there.
Are the people intermixing?
Yeah, well, and I just remember every night. I mean, that was the first time I ever had one of those moments on stage where you just drop your bullshit and get real for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember just saying, like, just, you know, four jokes in a row, just ate it. And then just going, hey, guys, all I feel like doing is crying, too.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know.
Now, what made it bad? Because my question is so broad, because there's so many different bads. There's bad crowd. There's your shit's not working.
Sure.
Bad club, sound bad. You know, bad booker or owner, all mm-hmm. this different stuff. But what made this bad?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, all the guys I kind of started out with, like Kyle and I were kind of like brothers in arms. We were the ones who go to all the shows together and like we started out like right around the same time. And our stuff, like we would laugh at like really, really weird, the stuff now that's considered regular comedy.
Yeah.
The stuff that is just like
kind of edgy, dark stuff back then.
But you're talking about stuff from your perspective, stuff from your life,
your voice.
Stuff that it takes someone, you know, like a not necessarily a leap of faith, but you got to really, you know, want to look at things through someone else's eyes, which is really all I look for in comedy. Like, I want to see it through, like, if you're doing a thing, I want to hear the story, I want to hear what's going on. But this was at a time where none of us would ever, we do guest sets at like Zany's, which is the only comedy club around, and would never do that well.
Right.
You know? And so like, you know.
And what keeps you going from that? Are you just kind of doing well because the material's not general, broad, hacky stuff?
It's hard. And we were also like young and starting out, you know? But I will say, when we'd play like, you know, a non-traditional venue like Joe's on Weed Street or this place called Quenchers or whatever.
Yeah. Hijacked venues.
We crush.
Oh,
you know,
we
do really well because people were really into like, oh, they're like, oh, when I think of comedy, I think of this guy who talks about how much he hates his wife.
Yeah.
This is good. This is what I like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was, it took a while for people to kind of be, you know, into that comedy in comedy clubs.
Kind of
that's
like,
I feel like right now is kind of a golden age because you can, you know, no one thinks of Patton Oswalt as like
an
alt comic as much. He's just a guy who just does well wherever.
Yes, sir.
And he can do that.
Right.
He never did different shit in Chuckle Hut or, you know, at the bookstore. He would do a tight seven in or whatever, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
So you're up there and it's going bad. Is it going bad every night or?
I mean, I would get little laughs here and there.
Yeah. And what's the headliner saying to you? Is he happy because he can come out and smash?
No, because Mick was the headliner. Right. Mick brought me with him.
Right.
And Mick would do good, but not like, he would do like, let's say feature good. He wouldn't do like headliner good.
Right.
And it really wasn't his fault because he had really good stuff, but it was just such a badly run. The place got shut down literally 2 weeks later because somebody got stabbed on the dance floor. Like, literally.
Yeah. You know. Stabbing on the dance floor. The problem I had, and I'm starting to headline a lot now because unfortunately, which is something I never like to say, but I need the money. You know, there's no money in featuring.
No, yeah.
And also, there was no feature spots anymore.
Mm.
They were just drying up, you know.
Really?
A lot of guys I worked with got TV shows, and they weren't going out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then headliners tend to have their two, three guys, and then that's it.
And it's also hard to, you know, I'm like not, I'm about... I would say medium barrel headliner, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
in the grand scheme.
Yeah, so you, it's like, you can't bring guys, right.
Some clubs I can.
Yep.
A lot of clubs I can't.
Yep.
You know, so you kind of just go, all right, whoever you guys want to, you know, give me, because that's just like another thing your agent has to negotiate with the club.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, he can bring somebody, but it's gonna cut into his dough.
Yeah, and his hotel and everything.
Right,
and all of a sudden you're going from making, you know, $6 to $2, mm-hmm. and you're going, fuck.
Right.
The thing is like, and I'm ready to man up and fucking learn the process.
Sure.
But an hour is, you know, when you've been featuring for like 3 years like me, and you're out doing 25 with no check drop and stuff, you're just coming with the fucking fire.
Oh, the good old check drop.
Yeah.
I had the weirdest thing, like, you're a store guy like me, and I got a check drop during my set. I'm like, how the fuck did I? Because it was like, for some reason, a bunch of people, and it was that thing when it hits to be like, a little after midnight, where people are like, you're funny, but I gotta go.
Yeah,
I've seen nine
There's
comics.
There's that fucking...
And it was that thing where I was like, how the... Huh? And it was literally after the person before me got off, they all called for their checks.
Yeah.
So they're getting them.
Yeah.
Midway through my 20 minutes, you know, my little 20 minutes in. It's like, ha, what? I can't escape the check drop.
There's an evil spot in that club of that. And what it's great up to that, and then the people clear out, and then it's great again because you got the scragglers and you can really just work on new shit and stuff.
Yeah.
So there's two different greats, you know, it's empty and you're like, all right, I can get some shit done in here.
Right.
But I think that what one of the problems also is when I started coming up on 7 years ago now, the store was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
So when you went on the road, it was fucking great. You're like, all right, people. But now the store's so great and the crowds are really comedy fans that when you go on the road now and you're dealing with papered rooms and all that shit, you're going, fuck, I got to get back home, man, to the store, where it used to be the opposite. So now I just look at it as like, fuck, if my podcast could just make some money, I could stay home and do the comedy for what I love to do it for, the art of it.
Mm-hmm.
I never got into comedy to make money.
Sure.
You know, there's people making fucking millions out there. Yeah, I get it. But to me, it really is about the process and getting on and doing the shit, you know? So I'm out there, and, you know, of course, these crowds, man, the late crowds were just fucking drunk.
Yeah. Late crowds are tough.
Yeah.
I mean, especially, like, I was in Atlanta a couple years ago, and, like, the late show on a Saturday, I was just like half the crowd was fine.
Yeah.
And the other half seemed like they'd been doused in bourbon.
Yeah.
Like, doused. And they were all interspersed.
Yeah,
there
that's
wasn't
the
like
worst.
A section.
It's just pockets of garbage.
Oh, boy.
Just pockets of garbage.
That is what you call putting out fires.
Yeah.
All you're doing is putting out fires. Like your whole for like an hour and then it's just like holy shit.
I called a bunch of headliners after it happened and they just laughing like, oh yeah, Saturday night, 10 o'clock show, those suck, you know, and all that. And of course, you know, your dream is to get to like a theater status.
Right.
To where you're just popping in and it's your audience and stuff. And you know, you're also dealing with different features and stuff that you and hosts that you get that could set up the dynamic all wrong. Like the host isn't going, hey, look, no talking during the sets and stuff. Let's have some fun. They just up there doing their shit. They don't care and they throw you to the wolves, you know?
Well, and the thing is you're and this is a good as well as a negative thing, you're an interloper. So the great thing is you're gone. Come Sunday, you're gone.
Yeah.
You know, good or bad.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, oh, it's so good. I wish there was another show or whatever.
Yeah, like Comedy
but
Works.
Sometimes, yeah,
I'm in Denver.
Exactly.
I'm like 24 shows, please.
Jesus. Yeah, Comedy Works, Acme in Minneapolis, Comedy on State, and God, Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah.
The stand, you know, the store, the cellar.
Yeah.
Fuck it. You know, there's all these great rooms.
And no, you'll have people that are like, that are like surprised. Like, you'll do a late show sometimes. You'll be like, that was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been
Comedy Addict in Bloomington.
Yeah.
It's like, boom. Every
single
show's
been headlining for like 6 months, a year now. Well, I mean, over the last couple of years here and there, but
sure.
But now steadily. And it's all been pretty fucking good. Maybe one or two like garbage can people, and I just roast on them and I'm on.
Yeah.
But this was like the Sunday show.
Yeah.
I couldn't even believe what was going on. They're like, oh, we got a group of 40 coming in. They work at the billiards place and their boss is bringing them.
Oh.
These people were just fucking garbage humans. They weren't even there for comedy. I'm like, why are you here?
Yeah. Well, those are the people that aren't even drinking for fun. They're drinking to just wash it all away. Just drinking to forget.
Totally.
Drinking to, you know, like a marathon drinker that's just like, I just want to drink through my feelings.
Yep.
And they get there and they're just like, oh, I got to listen to this guy talk now. I want to talk. The other thing I feel is like the thing with like bachelorette parties, it's always the one that's no, but I'm like the funny one.
Yeah.
So I want to say stuff.
Oh,
and they don't
even
realize. Yeah. Like they think it's just like, you know, and at bachelor parties too, but it's just like the person who thinks they're the funny one, maybe they are.
It's always the construction dude. Watch this one, man.
Yeah.
Watch this. I'll throw something in the mix here. Get it better.
Yeah, they'll yell like a catchphrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
From an ad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that makes you laugh, man.
Yeah, I know, right? They'll just be like, or they're repeating my bit. Nuts to butts. You know, you're like, oh,
In their mind, that's the most dangerous heckler, that one that thinks they're helping.
Yeah, they really do.
That is worse in a lot of ways than the person who's like, you suck.
Yeah.
Because you can just destroy that person without any need to look at your conscience.
Yeah.
Like, you asked for it. You
it's
know?
Rough out there. Do you ever get out there and you're like, man, fuck this?
No. No, in the end, no. Because look, it'd be one thing. I'll never forget, and I bring this guy up sometimes, and I talk to, like, you know, comics who are just like, I don't know, man, it's been driving me crazy. Yeah. I remember I did a guest set for this dude. I think I still lived in Chicago. Or maybe I was featuring, and I was still living here. Anyway, because I didn't start headlining till like, probably 2007 or 8,
right.
You know, when I was already out here, you know?
Right.
Not in Chicago.
You were just featuring the whole time, huh?
Yeah, and hosting, like, you know, playing little weird rooms and stuff.
Right.
But this guy, he gets on stage and everything he did just crushed.
Right.
Because he was talking about, you know, stuff with his wife and all this stuff. But you could tell, it's like, oh, you've done every one of these bits a billion times.
I know, right?
And he gets off stage, and the guy was, I could see it, he was like shaking, like his hands were shaking a little bit, and he's like talking to me. It was like one of those, like seeing like someone going through like the DTs, I knew it wasn't that.
Yeah.
It was just wear and tear from the road.
He's tore up.
He was just talking to me, he's like, so how long have you been doing it? And I'm like, I don't know, like 3-4 years. All right, yeah, cool, I've been doing it like, and he said this really long time.
Yeah.
And I'm in my head, I was like, I can't let myself be this guy.
Yeah.
Where, who knows, maybe he's on his third marriage. He's paying, you know, alimony. He's paying all this stuff. And
not writing.
He can't, not writing.
Not writing.
He's afraid to write.
Right.
Because if he starts, you know, eating shit or whatever.
He won't get hired.
He won't get hired again.
Right.
And he's like on the edge. He's probably taken just, you know, the smallest check they give a headliner or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just that, So it's like, as long as I fill my life with enough other stuff to keep me busy, that's also comedy based, whether it's writing, whether it's getting
podcasts, or sketches, anything.
Yeah. And not having that mentality of you know, the climate of fear.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like, the extreme version would be, I loved how Patrice O'Neill would be like, he's like, if a crowd would turn, I'm like, oh, you're not going to make it bad for me. I'm going to make it bad for you.
Yeah.
And he would just say his most brutal shit and walk the room.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have that kind of heart, you know, whether it's mean or it's strong, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, you know, the thing about comedy is it takes a long time to get really good at it, especially stand-up. And also, just like anything that's worth doing, you got to love it.
Yeah.
If you don't love it, why are you doing it?
Oh, yeah, I don't get that, right? Yeah, I don't get that.
You can tell somebody that's, like, up on stage and just phoning it in.
Yeah.
You know, they're just, like, trotting out the same shit. There was a guy I remember who hosted this show I did. I think it was in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he was great, but I was like, this guy's really funny. And all the waiters and the waitresses were like, well, yeah, he's been doing those jokes for like 15 years.
That
and they're like, they time when to go, like, oh, I can, He's going to be up there exactly five more
and
minutes.
And they're also in the back repeating his bits.
Yeah.
I mean, they know them all. Crazy glue. Ah-ha-ha. And they look at each other like they want to shoot each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's comedy is like, you know, it's like an addiction for me. Absolutely love
that's
it.
That's
great. Yeah, and now I'm starting to realize that some of my voice isn't going to work in a papered room. You understand? You know what I mean? So, like, when I'm performing around here, people, a lot of people know who I am or whatever from the podcast and stuff.
Sure.
And then they're into the style of bits.
Yeah.
And then when you get out on the road, you're going to have these pockets of your podcast guest or friends, fans, and then you're going to have papered room. And they're just kind of like, what is this? You know what I mean?
I would say just make fun of that.
Yeah.
Just be, you know. I mean, you'd be amazed at how much people love when you just rip on them.
Oh, no.
You're like,
I know.
You guys just came because someone gave you something on the street? How sad are your lives?
See, that's what the Sunday show wanted.
Yeah.
They wanted, because I felt it. I ripped on the girl. And I go, I get it. I know who you are at work. You're the one everyone hates. And they're like, yeah, get her.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was like, no, I'm not gonna do that for you. I'm out here trying to work an hour, you know, work new stuff and shit.
Yeah.
So Sunday I did something I've never done in comedy ever. I stood up there, delivered the bits, and just plowed through and walked off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like, anytime she would try to get something out, I would just be in the next bit already.
I've done that. Where it's just like, nope. I'm just going to talk over you.
Yeah.
Because when it comes down to it, no one can hear you but the people right around you. Yeah. I can hear you.
Yeah.
Because your faces are all facing
me. Totally.
You. But yeah, I mean, someone really has to be like a committed disruptor to you know, be able to resist that onslaught.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're like, look, I have the boom stick.
Yeah,
I have the mic.
I was winning. Yeah. And then she explodes on the club manager because of the 2-drink minimum and everything at the end of the night. So I was kind of happy the club manager had to deal with her too because they didn't throw her out.
Yeah.
So he was like, well, how was that? And I was like, the worst.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody threw her out. I lit her up 3 times. And
yeah.
I think that's really crazy. I think that's what gets under my skin a little bit is when you're the product for the drinks. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, we really are.
Yep, totally.
You know? Which is one of those, you know, unspoken but real things, but shouldn't be too real.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And it's tough for comedy clubs to have, like, a lot of real security, but
there
I do love the ones where you can just do the code, you know. I think that guy needs a cup of coffee,
yeah,
which means throw that dude out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, throw him out. Sorry, I just spit
all good,
on you.
Yeah.
That's my fault.
Yeah, all good, yeah. It's
like,
true, though.
But like, yeah, you just throw him right. But I remember I had a show at this place called the Jukebox Comedy Club in Peoria, Illinois.
Yeah.
It's like a little rundown, but the guy who runs it loves comedy, and it's a legendary comedy club. Been around for, God, like something like 30 years, something crazy.
Peoria?
Mm-hmm.
That's a Richard Pryor land.
It is, it is. And they have a really bad statue of him, but they got a statue of him, which is nice.
Yeah.
But went and walked over to it. I was like, oh, guys. Couldn't, you know, and
it's funny because
like
some statues are horrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some are great, like the Lemmy one right now at the Rainbow is
amazing,
phenomenal.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I had this bachelor party of real young dudes that kept, and they're all like arms crossed.
Yeah.
And they kept piping up. And like everyone else is loving my shit. And it wasn't even the biggest crowd. It kept, and I just snapped, dude.
Yeah.
I was like, look, man, you guys gotta be fucking men and shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, cause like, I was like, it's enough, man. This isn't funny. I'm making the moment real weird for everyone because of you.
Yeah.
And I was like, just like, I mean, could have heard a pin drop.
Yeah, yeah.
For like
yeah.
7 seconds. So I got myself together, went back into my jokes, finished strong, you know, like another 20 minutes. Good night. Went back in the green room, and I'm just pacing.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm mad at myself. I feel weak because I lost it.
Yep.
But then I went out to the bar, and I was like, I was having one of those weekends where I was just like, I'm not even going to drink. And I went to the bar, and I didn't go get house, but I definitely got a fucking frosty mug and had that. And a dude comes up, like the biggest one from the bachelor party, and was like, hey, man, just want to say thanks. My buddies who wouldn't shut up are the fucking worst.
Yeah.
Thanks for handling that. And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Thanks, giant 22-year-old that punched my head in.
Yeah.
You know, but it was that thing. It was like, oh, I did the right thing.
Yep.
The right thing. And like one by one, people from the audience who were just hanging out in the bar were coming up, hey, thanks a lot. Yeah. Whispering, thanks.
Yeah, we came all the way to see you, man.
Sometimes it's hard to have perspective and go like, I can't lose it on these people. But sometimes, I mean, I have friends who, like, I'm a friendly dude. I'll shine someone on, I'll make fun of them and go, I'll take it from here.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, if someone's talking.
Yep.
But I have friends who, the moment someone talks, they're like, yeah, no, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You're making yourself look stupid. Stop it.
Oh, yeah, I know guys just like that. And when I started comedy, I was like, whoa, I'd never do that. And then there I was doing it 5 years later.
Yep.
It's pretty, I love learning this stuff from comedy. I love it, I've done over 3,000 shows, and I was talking about Monday on the episode, and, you think you've seen it all.
Right, yeah.
Man, I've seen it all. But when you have a whole room that is just wasted. The problem was the club I was in, their bars all around the club. So if they're at the 10 o'clock show, they're drinking at the other bars till the 10 o'clock show.
Oh, yeah.
By the time I'm on, it's 10:45. They've had a few more in the club. And this whole fucking room was like a bomb went off.
Oh, yeah.
And I just stepped up. I was like, wow. And the feature kept saying from the stage, good luck with this one, Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck with these guys. And I was like, man, this is going to be fucking brutal.
Yeah, I played a club and I had four bachelorette parties in the audience.
Oh.
And the manager was backstage like apoplectic, like and apologetic, like, I can't throw them all out. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And they were all out of hand.
Yeah.
And the comic before me did like okay, but then... You know, I did well because I kind of played around and then got into my bits, and it ended up giving me like one of my favorite bits, from like 4 or 5 years ago. I just told the story of that night a little bit, and it ended up being fine.
Yeah.
But there are those times where you're just like, well, fuck it. Like, I'm a firefighter. Sometimes the house just has a tree on fire.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the whole fucking thing, and I got to run in and save a baby.
Wow.
I can't not run in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't have, none of us have that power to be like, I'm going to not do it.
I'm skipping this one.
Yeah.
I don't like these guys.
Old stories, like Larry David, in the 70s, we just walk out and just look at the crowd and go, nah, and leave.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Jerry Seinfeld
as
said that.
As a headliner?
No, just like, a comedy store situation.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Seinfeld's like, the audience didn't know what hit him.
Wow.
They're like, how dare you?
Yeah, just nah.
You're looking at them.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You guys suck.
And he walks off. Like, that's why he's a fucking billionaire now, because that curmudgeonly comedy everybody loves.
I remember as the shit night went down, the manager was like, yeah, so how was it out there? And I was like, dude, it was the worst. It was absolutely the worst since I've been doing comedy. The worst. And he goes, well, you know what Steve Martin says? He quit comedy because of the late show Friday nights.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, I never heard that. But I was like, wow, I could see that.
Yeah, especially for
And
like...
I'm not a pussy. I'm ready to take the challenge on. But it's just new to me. So I'm just like, whoa,
well,
man.
Also, Steve Martin, when he quit, he was like Zeppelin.
Yeah, yeah.
So his late night Friday nights were like late night Friday nights
at
the Staples Center.
Yeah,
you know,
they were like doing his bits and shit.
If everyone's hammered, in the Hammersmith Ballroom, and you're like, oh God. Yeah.
You come walking out and they're like, wild and crazy guy. The whole place, you're like, I'm fucked.
You do a joke they don't know. Boo!
Play the hits.
Yeah, play the hits.
Play the hits. Cashmere into Stairway. Now, when you're starting out comedy, who are your guys? Who did you like?
When I was a kid, my parents had a copy of Class Clown by George Carlin.
Yeah, great
and
one.
That's still one of my favorite comedy albums.
Fucking love it.
And obviously prior, I would sneak downstairs and watch, through the banister, I'd watch, Saturday Night Live behind my parents'
heads. Yeah, I watched that shit,
secretly.
Man. How old are you?
I'm 42.
Yeah, yeah, I'm 50, so I watched season one. I was addicted to John Belushi, man.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe him. And then Bill Murray, fucking Caddyshack, that shit.
Yeah, yeah, that whole National Lampoon school.
Killer.
And then, just in through, like, when I was coming of age, like high school, like Phil Hartman, watching like him in Saturday Night Live, just like insanely funny.
The original alt comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, right?
For sure.
Totally.
For sure. But then, you know, you get older and you'd have like, well, Richard Pryor was Eternal, of course, but you'd have like Mitch Hedberg and, you know, when Chris Rock did Bring the Pain, it was just like, I don't even know how he changed gears and became the funniest person living.
Yeah, man.
And then from that point, I remember it just becoming this, there were new people that I was discovering, like Brian Regan, you know. And
you're into
like,
clean guys? Guys that work clean?
Not
or?
Necessarily. No, I mean, it's like I like people that are just really unique. Like right now, I don't think there's anyone as amazing as Maria Bamford, who is just like, who's like a wizard.
Yeah.
Like when she just goes in and out of these characters.
It's unbelievable.
That I know from my life.
Yeah.
That it almost scares me. Yep. But it's not just mimicry. It's also like, oh, this is a real moment in your life kind of thing.
I go see her, man, whenever I can. I'll see she's around town and I go and I don't even talk to anyone. I just go to the back of the room, sit solo and watch the show.
Mm.
Because it's like performance art, man.
Yeah, but like in, like, someone's doing performance art and magic and acrobatics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just so, it's hard to be original in this game because what I loved about her was, impressions, but they're not fucking Jack Nicholson and fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It's her
sister.
It's someone she just met.
And I'm there. I feel like I'm in the living room when she's like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
You want to come back? You know, she's doing these things. And you're like, this is the only problem with me is I've got bad hearing. So I'm always like, what's she saying there? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I need those movie headphones. You know those movie headphones they give you? Because, man, I swear, my hearing is fucking shot, man.
I saw a guy when I was in college. We would used to do this thing for a class, which is like a performance evaluation, where you just go to see the weirdest art on stage and just like would write like papers about it. Yep. And like, saw this guy named Issei Ogata, who's a Japanese comedian. They call him like the Robin Williams of Japan.
Wow.
But his whole thing is he makes fun of the status quo. So a lot of people are like, he's undermining us. He's against Japan, and it's always authority figures.
Yeah.
And so he'll do, like, the gruff-voiced Japanese guy. He'll do, like, the guy with a shitty job who just wants to be happy and stuff. And I had a thing, and we all had things in our ears where a guy's translating everything he said.
Oh, wow.
And it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I was knocked out by that, but you're like, you know, if you can be funny in like, any language kind of thing, and he does characters, so it's a little different than someone doing stand-up.
Right.
You know, it's like, it just goes back to that relatability thing. We had a thing, a guy in Chicago who's still out there named Dwayne Kennedy, who we all looked up to, me, Kyle, Kamel, CJ Sullivan, Pat Bryce, you named it. All of us were like, that's the guy. Because he was the guy who, you know, could have been as big as he ever wanted to be. And now he's like, he's got an album out and he's trying to be a little more, you know, forward with it and stuff.
Right, right. Is he like one of those guys that's just like, hey, they'll come to me, like he doesn't social media and all that kind of stuff?
No, I think he was just like, I just want to chill out. And like, I remember being backstage at Zany's and being like, man, because there's a Chicago comedy festival we were all in that was kind of like a grassroots festival. And I was meeting industry for the first time. I was like, man, I sure would love to get like a development deal. I heard those are nice. And Dwayne's like, man, I've had like five. They're all right. And I was like, Five? Who's had that? You know.
Yeah.
And he'd already been on Letterman like three times.
Wow.
He's only got Letterman who'd be sitting there with a glass of red wine during his set. And
during
he wasn't even much of a drinker. But he just have it. Because his stuff was so he had this cool accent that like he could just say this stuff about like race relations that was biting.
Yeah.
But amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like
that's the thing. It's to I think that the thing I need to try to dig into next is make the material smarter. You know, like I love Bill Hicks where he says, play to the highest IQ in the room, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. But also, I would also say, but at the same time, be true to yourself.
Oh, yeah. No, totally.
You know?
Totally.
I'm not calling you stupid.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Hey, what?
No, be true to yourself, man. Yeah. You dumb.
It's fucking hilarious. What I'm saying, though, is...
improv teacher. Play to the height of your intelligence, guys.
Yeah.
Except for you, Russell. Except for you.
Yeah.
There's no hope.
But what I'm saying is if you're... like, I'm really loving Stanhope in the last couple years.
Jesus.
To me, he's kind of like the Henry Rollins of stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, Rollins is just so... you know, he's not a comic, but his spoken word is making me laugh the whole time because he's opening your eyes. Because
it's true.
It's all true.
It's very honest.
It's all true.
You know, raw truth is often, it can be painful. It can be just as often hilarious. Stanhope just makes me think of the guy.
I can't believe
who's, it. Like, he's like an astrophysicist, poet, in a bar, hammered, and he's just saying shit to you that you're like, you're crying laughing. You're like, God, I can't. I'm glad we're not around a lot of people who'd be offended by that.
Yeah.
But it's like really honest and real.
It's like Bukowski of comedy. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But also doesn't, you know, the thing about Bukowski was like, he's definitely in love with being famous.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, I'm pretty. He'd be the guy, like how Anchorman, you know, Ron Burgundy was like, I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I could see Bukowski saying he's kind of a big deal to like a chick in a bar. Stanhope, no.
No, no.
Stanhope just has like no ego.
Yeah.
And just, but like, you know, he loves comedy and loves comedians.
Yeah.
And, you know.
It's amazing because I love to dig into dudes and watch their stuff from the early days. Like, I'm a huge CK fan and, of course, Maron and Burr and stuff. And it's really amazing how these people change over the time and finally find their voice. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's pretty wild because I haven't seen any stand-up stuff from, say, 15, 16, 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what he started out like. Now, when you started out, were you totally different than now? Were you just doing jokes?
I just remember a Stanhope bit. It was like his first TV appearance.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I think it was in L.A. He's like, hey, just FYI, if you guys go down the sewer grate outside and go through all the feces and everything down there. There's an area in an alcove down under there, right next to a dead guy. There's a place you can smoke. It was just like he's making fun of like I don't smoke anywhere anymore.
Yeah, yeah,
but like
yeah.
It was just just like a public service announcement for his thing.
I'm reading his book right now. It's incredible.
Oh, about his mom?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that.
Well, it's mm-hmm. I mean,
not just about his mom.
Right. Yeah, the opening part, but that you know, that reminds me of his first his special from last year.
Oh, yeah.
Where it opens up, the first bit is about his mom, and I was like, I've never seen anybody be this dangerous on a special opening with a bit about we're going to kill my mom, help her kill herself.
Yeah.
And then it turns out to be a joke about, so I'm not giving it away, but about something else. And you're just like, this is an amazing, I mean, to go all the way that way for where the joke ends is incredible, you know?
Yeah.
So your early stuff, were you like just, because I think back now, of course, when I started, you just want the laughs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't have any kind of like, oh, I got to speak truth to power, man. I just wanted to be is funny.
Yeah.
And that's really like all I want now, too. But, you know, in the past 5-6 years, I've definitely tried to dig down and say, like, let me find some horrible shit.
Yeah.
And be a little more real.
Yeah.
You know, and there.
I'm doing a bit about diabetes right now. I got diabetes, you know?
Yeah.
And it just stops the room. It's unbelievable.
Because they feel bad for you.
Yeah, and they
it's from a kind place.
Right.
But you're also being like, no, but you're not being kind.
Yeah.
You're not helping me.
You gotta understand.
Yeah.
I'm fucking not dead.
It's okay to laugh.
I don't have cancer.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it if I didn't want you to laugh.
Absolutely.
Do you understand?
Yeah. So I've had to pepper it with some bits inside of there. You know what I mean? And now it's starting to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling Burr this, I was out with him a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, I feel like my three new bits, and this is really a strange place to be in, are so real that the old bits, I don't even like telling now, right?
You guys got to learn to navigate.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of go like, oh, let's go real, and then throw that away, and then go into,
you
know, whatever your silly bit you really like. Like, I will, like, there's one or two jokes I'll be like, and it'll get a laugh, and I'll be like, that's my dumbest joke, thank you. You know, like, because it's like, I know it's stupid.
Yeah.
You know? But it's just, it's fun. And so, like, you that's a great thing when you have, like, you know, the little bit of confidence in yourself. You can go like, look, I'm doing this joke because I love it.
Yeah.
I know it won't do that great.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I always say. I go, that one's for me.
Yes.
Yeah,
you know what
I
mean? Perfect.
Yeah, it's funny because I think it was Patton or somebody early on. I read this thing. I read shitloads of stuff about comedy because I just fucking love it. Mm. I read this thing where it might have been Attell or somebody, but they said, don't have your whole set edgy. Like, then there's no edge.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's funny.
There's no edge. It's just funny. Like, we get it. Yeah. Then you skull fucked your brother. And then you go into the next bit about how you killed your sister. And after a while, you're like, all right. You know, you got to have one really edgy bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the one maybe you leave on where people go, God, that was great.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would agree with that. And you want to have, you know, textures and things.
Yeah.
You want to have like different.
Yeah, you
got
to have
facets.
Layers to yourself too. So it's not just here comes the fucking, you know, biker comic or whatever.
Yeah, like one of the genius things about Dave Chappelle is that he like.
Oh, man.
He like.
So
he sounds like. Every joke sounds like he just thought of it.
I know.
And he might have. You don't know.
I know.
And that's what's kind of beautiful.
And even that, and that's coming from us who know the biz inside and out.
Yeah.
I feel like he's almost like the David Blaine of comedy where you're going, that's some next level magic.
I think he's like almost like an idiot savant where he's got, you know, he's so good at this thing and maybe like he can't, you know, work on microwave. Like, who knows?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? We don't know.
Yeah.
But it's that thing where it's just like where someone could, there's a guy who can sit down and beat a computer at chess and he knows how to do that.
Like, you look at guys and you go, who books their flights?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, who books their flights?
Because it ain't you. It ain't that guy.
Yeah, right? It's like the simple things just and fucking, I mean, they melt down. Oh, I got to get a fucking flight.
Exactly.
And then they got a genius record like the Strokes' first album, you know? You're like, what?
Exactly. Yeah. Like Chappelle, I remember saying, like, an interview like so long ago that he didn't think comedians had material.
Right.
He thought you just went up there and talked.
Yeah, I did too. When I started, like I was watching guys at the Laugh Factory and I was like, I'm getting ready to do comedy. And I was like, I know for one thing for sure, when I do it, it's going to be new stuff every night. I've seen these guys. They do the same stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And then real quickly you realize, oh, that's not going to work,
no,
you know?
No. Like we used to try to do, we had this thing back in Chicago called the Lion's Den that was an open mic every Monday. You never missed it. And if you'd have to get there like by 6 or 7 and they'd like ring a bell and you'd sign up and put your slip in the thing. And if they rang it again, you didn't get in.
Right.
But it was like between 30 and 50 people, everyone doing 5 minutes. And you always try to do like that was one of the things I missed the most is like having that week of going, oh God, what's my new 5?
Yeah.
You know, what's my new little thing?
Yeah.
Do?
That's why I
and
love Neil Brennan
stuff sometimes. But like, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And I remember Neil was like, you know. He's like, there's no excuse that you shouldn't be able to come up with a new minute a week. So that's 4 minutes a month.
Yeah.
Then 2 months, you got 8 minutes. And then 4 months, you got 16 minutes. And when he put it down into that fucking small of a timing thing, I was like, fuck, he's right, man. And you think that's easy. Like, I'll come up with a new minute this week, and then you don't.
Well, that's Burr's thing. He's like, all you got to do is, it's a new 5 minutes a month.
Right.
And you got an hour a year. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, you think about it that way, it's like, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I also, you know, like a lot of people, you throw shit away.
I do.
You work a joke a bunch, and you go, you know what? I don't love it.
Yeah.
I don't love it. I took a chunk out of one of my jokes, and the joke is so much better.
Yeah.
But it made the joke shorter.
Yeah,
you
right?
Know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's because it's parts where it's too wordy and all that. How do you write? Do you write on stage?
Yeah. Do
you just record it?
No, I'll just kind of keep it, like, it'll just kind of keep in my head, generally, how
no
I, how
bullet
I did
points
it.
Like in your phone or something, like this one's called Volcano, and just start working it.
Kind of, yeah. Right. I'll add if it's got a bunch of different, you know, whistles and bells, I'll add like things to that, like
right
other catchphrase.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's what
words.
I do. Like, I put the topic of the joke, and then I just put the catchphrases of each part of it.
Yeah. I don't know any other. Kind of think that's how most comics I know work.
Right.
You know, like I don't really know anyone who, I mean, I never really knew like comedy joke writing hell until I had to do a TV set and write it all out for standards and practices. Yeah, and they got to read it, and it's like
if you're doing
Jesus.
Conan, you got to write the whole thing out.
Or you just give them a tape. and they watch it. And so that more people do it on tape now. But there was a time where they'd be like, no, no, we got to read it all.
Wow.
It's crazy. Like, yeah.
And then, you know, when I first started, I didn't know, I still don't know how to write. I just go up and I just start doing stuff. And if it works, it works.
And you go like me, you go kind of fast.
Yeah.
So like writing out 5 to 7 minutes, it's like a book.
It's like a novel,
it's
right?
It's so long. Even just, I'm saying the jokes in my head, writing it out, and you look at it, you go, this is terrible.
Yeah.
None of this is a joke.
Yeah, because it's not like a joke. But
it would be the same thing if you read like a Bill Burr thing. Like the only people, you know, would be like, you know, it's like Jeselnik stuff.
Yeah.
Is set him up, knock him down, set him up, knock him down.
Yeah, that's classic joke writing.
Right, right.
That's classic joke writing. It's interesting, too, because on the last Jeselnik special, which, by the way, Anthony's one of my favorites ever, and he's a lot like I never know if he's serious or not in the hall. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, you want to do my podcast? No.
Right.
And just walks by.
I do not.
Yeah. I will not be doing that. And this walks on, you're like, wait, he's joking, right?
Yeah.
But in my mind, I'm like, what's my podcast going to do for him? Like, hey, it's going to boost your career. You know what I mean? But, you know, on his last special, he ended with that whole trouble he was in with Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And I asked him in the parking lot, I said, man, that was so fucking electric, the last 20 minutes of your special. Is that going to be your new direction? And he was like, I don't know, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
And then as I watch his new stuff, it's not his new direction, but his new stuff is so fucking great, you know? It's a little more storytelling.
He kind of does both.
Yeah, right.
He's got that story about being like, so drunk in England, he couldn't like speak or read the signs in a language that he grew up with. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
it's
our language.
Yeah,
it's England. I speak English. But then he'll still do, you know, dark just one-liners.
God,
sure.
He's one of the best.
Yeah,
right?
He's always been one of my favorites. I remember it being in first time I got to know him was like when I moved here, like. I don't know, God, what did I mean? Like 13 years ago or something like that, maybe like 12 years ago. And it was like Kyle and I in like West Hollywood, it was back when Kyle and I lived together. And there's this show at one of those gay bars like on Santa Monica.
Oh, yeah.
And you basically stood on the bar and they'd project your face onto a big screen.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, every comic's kind
of
doing like...
Of course, the bit about it.
Little jokes about... Yeah, jokes
put
about,
your dick on my screen.
Right,
or
yeah. Get like, hi, gays, ha-ha, whatever.
Yeah.
And like Anthony gets up there and the first thing he goes is, sup, faggots?
The
big smile. Huge laugh.
Wow.
And they're just like, oh, fuck you. But it was like...
Yeah.
You know, he said it like smiling.
Of course.
And then he went into all his evil shit. And it was like, oh, you're a dick. I get it.
Yeah, you know, that's
Anthony's thing is like, he's a dick on stage and off stage he's not. Or even he's messing with you, whatever.
He's
you know?
But I
it was like
him.
That made me laugh so hard because it's like, fuck, man, that took some real balls.
Yeah.
And that was the reason it was funny is because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
No one that's here has any sort of animosity towards anyone that's homosexual at
Not
all.
Not at all. We
but
wouldn't
like,
be here.
What an yeah. like when it was like, oh, you glorious asshole.
Yeah.
You piece of shit.
Yeah.
You know.
Now you and Kyle move out together.
Yeah.
And how struggling was that? So you guys are living in Chicago, and one day, what do you say? Let's get the fuck out.
I was just like, I gotta get out of here, and in like the summer of 2002, and was like. I mean, I feel like a hamster on the wheel.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just time. And, you know, people back then would tell you everything from you got to have a spec script, you got to have a writer's packet, everything. Don't go out there without
all kinds of fucking rules.
Just
these gatekeepers
bullshit.
With these invisible rules.
Yeah. And
you can't start comedy when you're 44. Yeah. You
and
know,
exactly. And I just knew, I was like, no, like I know, like, I can't give myself any excuses. Because I'll just still be working at the same bar. Still a waiter, you know, and I got out here. I came out here like a couple months before Kyle did, and then Kyle came out, and I was couch surfing, and he while I was at work, found us an apartment, like a two-bedroom, which is great.
Yeah.
And what was I? I think
Where
I
was it?
It's literally 3 blocks from my girlfriend and my place. It's like... It's
oh, well, we don't know where you live.
In Los Feliz. I mean, Los Feliz.
Right, people? Yeah.
It was on Dracena and Ambrose.
Dracena, Ambrose, where it was. What was the rent, like $8.50?
It was...
Because back then, Los Feliz was
probably,
not fucking
you know,
good.
Shit,
yeah, right?
It probably was like $900 or something like that. for a two-bedroom.
I tell everyone when I first moved here, it was $1.
You just blew my mind saying that because you're absolutely, we were scraping by.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We had, like, shit jobs. We work, you know, crap jobs all day. I did catering because that's, you know, it's like a job I can get like that, just, as, you know, working these weddings and stuff. And then I was a PA. PA for a production company that only did reality television.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and they would just like pay us shit and no benefits. And Kyle was,
that's why I can't believe people watch that shit. It's just they're worried about Chinese sweatshops when we've got a sweatshop right here in America, reality shows.
Yeah.
It's basically the guys on the top floor going, can you believe they're still watching this shit? Yeah. We don't pay anyone.
And it's like, that was an awesome lesson because when Last Comic Standing came along, I was like, oh, they can edit it. I've seen these people edit you to look like anything.
Oh, yeah.
So you can go just on that show.
Turn
and
you
like,
into the evil fucking guy.
Dean seems like a metal guy. Let's make him the racist.
Yeah.
And like edit something you said in the weirdest way.
Totally. Ruin your life.
Whatever.
Just ruin your life.
You know, for ratings and stuff. But Kyle was working at a musical instrument place. No, fuck. He used to fill orders for cake decorations over the phone.
Yeah.
And he also had to cold call people to see if they needed more cake decorations.
Wow.
I remember he had bits about that of like, what is the thing you never need in your life?
Yeah.
More cake decoration.
Hey, it's Kyle calling back. I noticed that you didn't get the smiley faces.
Yeah, I was just saying if you... No? Fucking right you don't. Bye.
And then he worked at a music instrument place that would just seemed like absolute hell.
Was there any competition between the two of you guys?
No, we just like always had this thing of and then, you know, the last job we had, I got it first and then I got him a job there. We were closed captioners for the hearing impaired. And that was like, that job was awesome.
Wow. Where was that at? Furbank TV?
In Furbank.
Mm-hmm. You just typed up the stuff?
No, just typed it like in advance. So like, here's the Law and Order. And you'd spend like 6 hours captioning it.
Wow.
It was like editing. Stop, start, write the words, put it somewhere where it doesn't block someone's face.
Wow.
You know?
A lot of that ha 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 train sound right now.
Laughter in brackets. Yeah. We captioned fucking everything. Yeah. Girls
Airplane
Gone Wild.
Airplane overhead. How about that? Girls Gone Wild.
Hunting shows.
Just deaf
hunting
jackers.
Shows, just hot, wet breathing. Just a guy looking at a deer. You know, and then
hot, wet breathing.
Gunshot, and then just elk falls over.
Yeah, dead elk.
And like
sad.
That job was great because they'd give us time off, and I could go. Like, at the time, I started getting like a bunch of commercials.
Oh yeah.
And so I had like more money for us for like beer and stuff, and like so I had.
You guys were like teammates.
A little bit. Like I had a little more success doing that, and then I went to Montreal first, and I got like a manager first and stuff. But then Kyle is like now like way bigger than I am, but it's like I always just feel like I'm always just like go team, you know?
Oh yeah,
because none of us have any kind of attitude about like who's doing better and who's doing worse. It's just like, look, man, I'm paying my rent and I haven't had a real job since 2008.
Yeah,
so
that's fucking win. That's win.
Exactly.
I feel like Kyle's like my long lost brother.
Yeah,
like secretly.
Oh yeah, if you were
it's
like
so weird.
If you were like, yeah, we're cousins.
Yeah.
People are like, yeah, you are.
Yeah, it's
you are.
So weird. It's almost weird when we're on the same shows. It's like, is it those guys related or what?
Yeah, you're both tattooed. It's both like, got that gravelly voice.
Yeah, and we kind of have the same kind of ideas.
Yes.
Like where, you know, we look at life kind of the same. We're into the same kind of music. We love BMX. Yeah. You know, it's all kinds of BMX.
BMX. Yeah, yeah. No, Kyle's so into BMX. It's amazing. We went and saw Guns N' Roses at San Diego, their last show before they left the States.
So great.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. And we had just banana seats, courtesy of the kid. Courtesy of Kyle bought them for us. And
who bought them?
Kyle did. And we're just on the train, and he was just getting into just like, you know, the things people are doing with them now, it's better than any fucking sports, you know.
Crazy.
And I was like, wow, you know, like, I didn't know that. And I'm kind of just like, so it's like, we've known each other so long, and, you know, we don't hang out as much as we used to, you know, back then, but that's how it goes when you get older and stuff.
Yeah,
but
you're working, and then you both have girlfriends, so it's just like you come home, and you don't just go, hey, buddy, pizza and beers, fish tacos.
Well,
you know?
Kyle for a while, he was on the road so much, maybe like 2-3 years ago, like I never saw him.
Yeah.
And when he'd come home, I knew for a fact he wouldn't see any of his friends. Yeah. He would just sit in his apartment and just be like, I don't want to be around anyone.
Well, you got to decompress. Like, right. Yeah. I think that's that's an amazing thing about comedy. As much as you want to start having success, when it starts to happen, and it's funny because I played music for years, and it's way different because with music, you go on tour for like 3, 4 months, 5 months, maybe let's say a year. But then for the next 2 years, you're home writing a record and you know, playing some local gigs and stuff. So you have some balance.
Yeah.
But with comedy, it takes off, and then you've been poor so long, you can't say no to like, well, here's weekend number 74 in a row. And you're like, I told you no. And they go, yeah, but look at the offer. And you're like, fuck. All right.
Yeah, and you have that fear. Yeah. You have that fear where you're like,
stop working.
I'm going to keep saying no. I say no to jobs. They're going to dry up.
That's true.
And but it's like, at the same time, you got to have that balance. And thankfully, Kyle does now.
Right.
Where he's just like, no, I need time. I need time home.
Yeah.
I have a relationship now. You know, I need to preserve my friendships with people and
well, you
and
do VO also for Comedy Central, so you got to check in your mind. You go, all right, I can say no to those garbage gigs now.
But he even travels on the road with like a recording device.
Yeah, that, I know. That's how he does it. It's great. Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you guys went and saw GNR, man.
Oh,
how'd you like that?
It was incredible. I was knocked out by what a good
show
it
was. Were you a GNR guy? What kind of music are you? A rock guy?
I was some rock. I was really into hip hop growing up. I was really like a rap guy when I was a kid. But
what early stuff, NWA and stuff, the mid '90s stuff.
No, like the NWA and
what a great film, huh?
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
I did too, man. That could have been just complete cheese.
Oh yeah, it could have just been a mess, and I was. Parts of it was I was like, I remember those days, and I was just like, look, man, the line about we're just telling the truth of the streets, don't feed me that bullshit again, because I didn't buy it back when I was 12 either.
Well, yeah,
you know,
I mean,
there's that thing where it's just like, yes, but you guys got fucking paid by saying the filthiest shit, but also not like garbage shit, like even though it was fun at the time, Two Live Crew, horrible rappers, and let's just get paid. NWA were like, you know, I believed Eazy-E would murder three people on the way to the recording studio.
Yeah,
believed it.
Yeah,
I was like, this guy's killing people.
Yeah,
just like when you heard, like, you know, let's say Kill 'Em All, Metallica. You're like, these guys are maniacs.
Yeah, right.
What do these guys do to stab people all the time?
Yeah,
like it was like when music had real edge. Almost like
it's scary, merciful fate. You know, you're like, that's definitely the devil.
That's the devil for sure.
I used to tell a story where I went and saw Merciful Fate on Don't Break the Oath album.
Wow.
And I was kind of like sitting up in the balcony area, kind of, and I was a little spooked.
Yes.
Because I was like, hey, I'm pretty evil myself. Like, I'm crazy.
Yeah.
But these people in here are a little next level.
Well,
you know what I mean?
In Portland, we had the punk rock scene, which was very down and dirty. And also, you had, since Oregon is incredibly Caucasian, you had a lot of fucking hardcore right-wing skinhead. And I remember the days of the pit where you'd be jumping around and people would lift you up if you fell. And I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Not anymore.
But there were those guys, also those guys who would do like Wall of Death or like, you know,
or the fucking fist throwing.
Yeah, fist
How about the guy that goes, this is my favorite guy in the pit. He goes the opposite way. Just basically the opposite of the pit. Like, take me out, motherfuckers.
Take me out, try me.
It's like a kamikaze pitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, yeah.
Yeah, just insane. And we also had this group called the Scars that were skinheads committed against racism.
Wow.
And they were like, but here's the thing. They were almost more violent than, and they were the Sharps, I forget what they stand for, but they were also like, you know, so against racism, which is this thing where they would like attack, you know, all they wanted to do was beat up a Nazi.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling. I understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to let it out on something.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, you're being violent for violence's sake.
Yeah.
You don't really want any social change.
It's just war.
And it was just fucking war in some of these clubs where they'd be at opposite ends and it 1, 2, 3, 4, and you're like, okay, I can't be between these guys.
Nope.
I'm in a fucking...
There's going to be some knives and pencils in your side, like,
Yeah, I'm in like a windbreaker zipped to the neck at the back of the room, like, oh, no.
Yeah. I remember
I'm at the wrong show right now.
I saw one of the craziest crowds of all time. I went and saw Slayer at the Sharks Arena, Shark Tank in San Jose. And this is on God Hates Us All tour.
Yeah.
And I never seen anything like this. The entire floor was a pit, And what they did was they actually bought Slayer shirts, lit them on fire, and ran around in the pit with their shirts on fire. Full-blown shirts on fire. And I was up in like the side seats, and I was like, this could be the most radical thing I've ever witnessed. This is insane.
Yeah.
And people just shirts off on fire in the pit.
Yeah. And it looks like a Saxon invasion.
It was unbelievable.
I remember seeing the crowd at Lollapalooza 2, like the old one.
Oh, yeah.
Love
those. Yeah. And, 2 was great.
2 was great.
Oh.
And I remember seeing, I was up on a hill. It was like outside Seattle. You know, this is the height of the grunge thing, so they had, like, Pearl Jam and Soundgarden.
Yeah, Ministry. Ice Cube.
That's what I mean. Looking down, I saw Ministry playing that.
Just one fix.
And, like, the crowd started moving. I was like, oh, this is what a medieval war looks like.
Yep.
From the top.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't have knives and axes and shit, but it's like, this is what it looks like.
And the stage was all bones.
Yeah.
Remember that, Ministry? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had bones hanging from his...
on his mic stand
shit. Like how Aerosmith has scarves.
Yeah, he had fucking bones. Like actual real shit he killed earlier that day. That fucking video with fucking, what's his name? Just One Fix. Mm-hmm. It's got, you know, Monkey Never Dies.
It had
Burroughs, William S. Burroughs, and he's just in there, Monkey Never Dies.
Yeah.
And just like, yeah.
I forgot that he was in that.
Oh, that's God. Funny. Burroughs, man. He's also in Drugstore Cowboy. Remember at the end?
Yes, that's right.
Fucking love that. And Matt Dillon runs into him in that place. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, man. It's just fucking, what, man. Music is just amazing, right? Like, what are you listening to now?
Oh, right now, it's all over the place, but I like the new De La Soul. It was all like a crowdfunded album. And it's so many left turns. It's so weird. But I have like a ton of, you know, I'm like, I've been buying vinyl for a while.
Yeah,
and
me
like,
too.
And let's see. I was listening to Cleaners from Venus the other night. It was like, you know, 80s Britpop.
Yeah, yeah,
group.
Yeah.
Master Puppets.
Oh,
just threw that on. Ridiculous.
Cliff Burton passed away last Tuesday.
R.I.P. Yeah, man. And that was
30 years.
Just probably one of my Desert Island albums for sure.
Yeah, right.
You know.
It's tough to pick the best Metallica.
It is tough.
People hit me all the time. Yeah. It's definitely never going to be Kill 'Em All for me.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Yeah.
But it goes between Lightning, Masters, and Justice.
Yeah.
It's really...
See, that's the thing. I love Justice.
I love Justice.
I have a friend of mine who's a musician who's like, he hates Justice because the songs are great.
Oh.
But he says...
he doesn't the like the mix, no bass.
The mix is like, it's all drums.
Yeah, yeah.
And because the drummer did it.
Yeah.
The drummer was like, more drums.
You know what's
funny? But it's like, I never noticed that.
Me too. I played music and I recorded records all my life. And I think that like, you're missing the whole point of a record.
Hmm.
If you sit down, like people hated Saint Anger because they were like, no guitar solos and fucking, and then they hated the next one because, Lars's snare sounds horrible.
Right.
It's like, who's even listening to that?
Mm-hmm.
I never put it on to go, well, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
Man, I put it on 4 or 5 on my stereo. It's fucking rocking.
Right.
And are the songs good or not?
Yeah, well,
that's
like,
all I care about.
It's like how AC/DC had no guitar solos, but they had like a bagpipe solo.
Yeah.
No, let's have a bagpipe one, though.
Yeah,
you know, it's just... But they're amazing songs.
Who gives a fuck, man? It's just at the end of the day. And Justice for All is just such a fucking... Like a statement, man.
Yeah.
No one was doing that. It was just prog metal.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, these songs are like 8-9 minutes.
Yeah.
They're about the most insane shit ever.
Well, it's like when you hear something like that and you haven't heard anything like it before, like which I hadn't, not really.
No.
Like the first time you hear Blackened, you're like, what's going on?
Go, 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 go.
And you're kind of like, you have that thing. Even as a someone who has no musicianship whatsoever, not really, you're like, these guys are like classical musicians, and they are.
Oh, yeah.
They really are.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, same as like Puppets, the starting of Battered.
Oh, fuck
you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, I'm at a classical acoustic guitar concert, and oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. Filmmaker
guitar.
And
then a dragon comes through the wall.
Yeah. You know, just like... I think Hetfield is definitely one of the top 5 guys of all time. It's just, I never seen a guy, I just recently got this book. It's a coffee table book, The 30 Years of Master of Puppets. You got to see it. It's at my house. And it's a huge coffee table book, and they sold it about a month ago through their website. It opens with the with the bus crash with Cliff, just sure. to let you know where they were. And then it goes into this full pictorial and notes and everything of the making of this record. And there's all these handwritten lyrics there. And as if you're looking at the handwritten lyrics, you think, you know, and I love when people say, like, you know, he's only like 22 when he wrote that. It's like, that's when everybody writes their masterpiece. If they're going to. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's different with comedy. I always tell people with comedy, people don't write their masterpieces till 20 years later.
Yeah.
But with rock, it's totally the opposite, you know, later.
Because I feel like you get older, you overthink it.
Yeah.
You have so many more experiences. You kind of, it kind of has to be like
it's
a little,
be a gang.
Little simple and maybe a little dumb.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Where it's just like things just land.
Yeah. But I looked at his lyrics, you know, and I think I remember when I was 22 and I was writing like, you know, like I'm looking at his lyrics going like, how do you even come up with this shit?
Yeah.
I know he's reading a lot of books. He was about war, and of course he's gone through stuff with, you know, drugs and everything like that. But just the way he does it, he's not like a hitting the streets, look for heroin, shoot it in my arm. You know, he's not like that at all.
Yeah,
it's all this fucking intricate stuff. You know, master
also,
of puppets.
You know, I feel like rock culture and drug culture is like metaphors and slang.
Yeah.
Like no one has ever like, hey, you guys want to get some heroin after the show?
Yeah.
There's always some code.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that can go for anything. That could be, you know, you could reference your motorcycle.
Yeah.
People are like, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Yeah, I had a guy on here, Mark Ford from the Black Crowes, and he called cocaine chili weather, which was the most genius.
That's amazing.
That's the genius term ever.
That's funny.
He came up to me, he's like, hey, man, you know anybody that's got a little chilly weather? Dude.
That's so funny.
And then I sat and tried to name them all, you know, like Toot, Bumpy Road,
Columbia,
Snow.
Marching Powder.
Marching Powder, Blow, you know.
Booger Sugar.
Booger Sugar, all of those, you know, Tweak, whatever.
Yeah.
There was so many. And all of them, he had come up with the top one.
Yeah.
It's
so great.
Chilly weather.
That's so, like I remember George Clinton was saying that Sly Stone, he spoke entirely in metaphors.
Wow.
So, like, people were just, he's like, I've never heard someone use slang better than that in my whole life.
God, that's so cool.
You know, he's like number one soul brother. Could just, he'd be around, like, record executives, be like, the fuck is this guy talking about?
Yeah,
you know?
That's so great,
isn't that amazing?
Man. Yeah. I just tweeted a video of them, Sly and the Family Stone, playing, Midnight Special.
Oh yeah,
from like 75 or whatever. It is mind-boggling.
Yeah, I have like 6 of their albums.
Oh.
They're all different.
Yeah,
they're all amazing.
Next level shit, man.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, to watch them play that shit though live, I just sit there and go like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
He's just up there, man, and his finesse on the guitar and his outfit and shit, he's just like, you know, if you want me to stay, I'll be around the way. You know, and he's just touching the guitar, and it's like, bow, wow, wow, wow.
Yeah.
Killer, man. Wow.
Yeah, and like, even someone who, like a modern musician like D'Angelo.
Oh, yeah.
Who is,
love him.
He, amazing, but he was like, Sly and the Family Stone's band is my favorite band.
Yeah.
To this day.
Yeah.
Of anyone. Like, he's like that because he can name all the musicians.
Yeah.
And it was like Benetton. It was like United Nations of people. You had a white guy and a black
dude. It's incredible,
you know?
Man.
Yeah. And I mean,
looking at it and you're just like, look at the unity going on here. And then it's like,
that
look
that people
at,
you know weren't into.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
There are
some
probably
white
black
guys
people watching
like,
a funk band going, what's a white guy doing there?
Yeah.
And every white person being like, I hate this music.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's so funny that we're still talking about race issues right now.
Yeah.
And you think he's up there, he's singing about race issues.
Right.
He's got a multicultural band.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, 2016, 17 coming up. And it's just fucking unbelievable.
They don't, because they don't get addressed. Not in a real way.
It's weird. I was just in the Bible Belt with Burr doing shows, and it's just like, you think that like people, you're like, well, they're not going to think like that anymore. They got the internet and stuff now, right? No.
No. Well, no. The internet's made it worse for
some
people.
Made it worse, man.
Because
they're just like, actually, one guy was saying the internet was actually what the devil was. He's like, it's just opening up Satan right there. And it was just like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I got no time for that.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. I could be here only five more years
I don't
or
think
something.
The devil has certain things you can kind of look at and use usefully.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That you're not giving up a part of yourself or something. It's just like, there's a lot of helpful shit on the internet,
I just held my
man.
Cell phone up and I was like, Satan Jr. right here.
Yeah, this is Baal.
Yeah.
My other phone is Mephistopheles.
Yeah,
these are lower level demons that work for Lucifer.
Yeah. Meanwhile, he had one in his hand. You know what I mean? He just, fuck. What do you got coming up?
Let's see. I got a pilot I did for Amazon that's going to be coming out with Ben Schwartz and I. And it's got like Rory Scovel and a bunch of great people. That's probably coming to. The great thing about Amazon is they put their pilots up.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Whether it goes
and
to
then
series
you vote
or not,
for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Marilyn Rice Cub had one up last year.
Yeah.
And if the people like it, they make it.
Yeah. Well, it's a mix.
Right.
You know what I mean? They might also be like, we still like this one. Let's do it. You know?
Yeah.
But it's supposedly it'll be up by December. And then other than that, I got a Netflix special called Big Dumb Animal that people can check out if
they
want. And
you got a vinyl.
I've vinyl for all my specials.
Yeah, I see your vinyl every time at San Jose Improv, and I take a picture of it every time.
Oh, right on, man.
I love you, man.
You too, buddy.
Thanks
too.
For doing it. Give them your Twitter.
I'm on at Bronger, Brauner.
Yeah.
And mattbronger.com for any of my shows.
Check Come back again.
I would love to.
All right,
I'd
please.
Love to.
Thank
awesome.
You so much, and I'll see you at the store. You at the store this week?
Not this week, but I'm coming back next week. I'll give my avails for
right
sure.
Right on. Yeah, thanks for tuning in, guys. Follow them and keep partying.
Thanks, guys.
Candles lit.